This is the first formal interview with Mrs. Wexler. A previous interview had been held, the purpose of which was to gain a broad scope of her experiences and life. This previous interview had not been taped, but extensive notes were taken. The following interview took place in Molly Wexler's living room on 2. The interview begins with a description of her early home situation and her experiences with regard to schooling. It then covers her initial apprenticeship at the age of 8, her later work with a woman in Poland, where she went at the age of 10, her return to Brest-Litovsk, and her subsequent work there. Next covered in the interview is her passage to the United States, her initial work experience in New York, and her eventual move to Cleveland and her work situation there. Molly Wexler became involved in the trade union movement while still in Poland after hearing a park meeting by students about trade unionism. She was involved in organizing in some fashion in New York and more so in Cleveland. Her major active organizing career, however, began when she went to Chicago in 1916. These activities will be considered in the next interview with Mrs. Wexler. So the first things, I think, is anything that you remember about your home situation before you left and went to apprentice. You had some brothers and sisters. You had some brothers, I know.
Nine children.
How, were you the youngest, or?
No, there were two more younger ones. All of them are dead. I'm the only one left of the entire family.
Now, did the other children go work at an early age also?
Yes.
They all did?
Yeah, they all did. I mean, except those that were sick, and quite a number of them. Four of them were born sick and not being able to give any care. So naturally, the older ones, the stronger ones, had to go and help make a living for the family. So I was one of the healthy ones, and the boys became carpenters.
And the girls all went into the needle trade?
Two of them, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was the third one. I'm the seventh in the family.
And your father was a rabbi, you said,
yes,
before?
Yes, yes.
And he was an Orthodox rabbi,
yes,
so.
Orthodox. In a very social understanding person that I found out in later years, in amazing, in his Orthodox way, how he would agree with a lot of things. Yeah, my mother too. My mother took in a little bit of dressmaking in the house.
Did you learn any dressmaking from her then?
Yes.
Before you apprenticed?
Before apprenticed. When she gave me a day, I already knew how to run a machine. And the machines there weren't like they are here. They weren't power machines. You had to use both your feet. Did you ever see anything like that? Yes, she taught me that. And then she told me that I better go away and learn something to do because I'm capable. So I liked it. To school, we couldn't go anything.
What is, did she start teaching you how to?
Or I must have been about 6 years old. And she began to show me how to sew on a button, how to sew hoops on, and a little bit of a machine, which I was very scared. And by 8 years, I was working on a machine, and then I went away.
Did you have any schooling at all?
Well, this is an interesting story. When I was about 7 or 8 years old, I began to see children go to school with books. And I didn't realize that Jewish and non-Jewish, that never meant much to me. And I told my mother that I'd like to go to school. And she says, no, they can't do it. You have to pay for it. Desire, certain. So other children that I talked to that were playing on the street, we all decided in one family, by the way, that the two boys are here or there. One is the editor of a newspaper now. The family decided they hired a teacher. And twice a week, we organized eight children, eight of us. And there were three girls and five boys. And twice a week, this man would come to their house, and we would all be there in the evening, and he began to teach us how to read and write. And while I was already working as an apprentice, I was coming here to learn too. And after he was with us for about a year, this is something to remember, the man was not Jewish, and he knew the history, but we didn't know, we felt that something was there. About after a year, he found out that some of us are quite capable of going to school. And he told us, and the year was over, he said, if you want to come with me a certain morning, I'm going to take you to the city school. The city school was run by the government, and there were other side schools, but the city school, then I'll see if we can take you in. So three of us decided to go, and I was one of them. And he went with us, told us to try to clean up and look good. And when we came there, we walked over to the desk and we were standing. We understood Russian, actually they all spoke Russian. We understood each other, started to speak a little bit. And I saw him, I didn't exactly get the idea, but I saw him get excited to the man and talking and pointing at us that we're bright and everything else, you know, nothing. He turned around and he said to us, no, you wouldn't be accepted. Because the law under the Tsar was that only three Jewish children could get into a class of 100 Gentile children. Only three. And these three had to be children of merchants of the city, wealthy people. The others, no. And he looked as if he was really an enemy of them. And you know that when they went away, the boys said, we're going to make a revolution. You know, just chill, child talk. But let me tell you that I think that I became a revolutionist since then.
How old were you then? About 8, 9?
They're about 9 years old, yeah. And so he continued teaching us. No charge. Up to then, charge. But then there was no charge. And I learned, I didn't say that a big education, but out there I could read the newspaper and I could speak a little bit, which I still do. And that's how started my education then. Yiddish my father taught us.
You spoke Yiddish in the home?
Yeah, at home I spoke Yiddish, yeah. In fact, very few of my family could speak Russian. Just about three of us, the best remember. We lived in a ghetto type. So naturally they spoke their language, they went to their synagogue, they went to their business people, and they had no contacts whatsoever. So I just didn't learn, but it was in my mind, and later, my later years, I made it up a little bit. I wouldn't say hi, but I made it up. I went in the evening to school, and I dedicated myself to somehow.
Now, then...
That's history, for sure.
Then when you were eight is when you were given away to apprentice. Now, what does that mean exactly? That you went to live with the family and stayed with them all the time?
Yeah, you have to dedicate yourself. We don't pay them. They take you in the house, they give you food and everything. But you have to do other things that she wants you to do besides teaching the dressmaking. So she had four children, and I had to help out with the dishes and the children. And she kept teaching me. But there were other apprentices that weren't as capable of the work. So she let them do most of the housework and me most of the dressmaking. In that case, I really became a specialist in the early age.
Now, were the other apprentices all young girls too?
Yes.
Do you remember how many there were?
I think we were three of us apprentices. The older ones already would come in from their home into work. And they helped us, they taught us. You see, she didn't have time because she had customers coming in the house. It's a dressmaking. Madame Apteka was her name.
Was she Russian?
Yes. Yeah. Bright woman, very intelligent woman. And I would say she treated us fairly well.
Was she Jewish?
No.
How did she react towards Jewish?
Very nice. As long as you were capable of working, that's all. In fact, if there would break out occasionally misunderstandings or whatever it is, she would come in and settle it.
So there were four of you who were apprenticing?
Yeah.
And then how many other workers did she have?
Five.
Five others? Yeah. So there were nine people?
Nine people. The other ones would just come in for mm-hmm. certain hours.
Were they all women too?
Yes, all women. I never remembered working with men until in the later years.
And how much, you got paid nothing at all then?
Yes, the first 3 months or 4 months or something, there wasn't anything. But then it came Easter time, and we had to work at night, all night, because things had to be done for holiday, have it marked down. So she would prepare us before, in the evening we would start and rest for a while, and then we'd sit up all night. Not those that went home, just a few of them, those that stayed there. And we did the finishing, the pressing, or whatever had to be done. Because for the holiday, everybody had to have their, the richer women had to have their clothes. So after we did that, she began to pay us.
Do you remember how much?
Two guildens. You know what a guilding is? In America, it would be about 15 college cents. I'm trying to say copies. Yeah, about 30 cents a week or something like that. Yes, she would give us for, spending money or something. And naturally, I gave it away to my mother because they were very much in need.
Now, did all four of the apprentices live in her house?
Yes. Yeah. She had a nice big house. Polizeiskaya ulica means the street of the police department. Main street, very nice business street. Yeah, we all stayed there.
And how many hours a day did you work usually?
There was no stop. Just work, that's all. If it's needed. If it's not needed, then we stopped. That's all. That's all we need. Get up in the morning, get a little something to eat, and she went to work. Until she had to send you out for shopping or whatever. She used us for everything. Whatever. I mean, we didn't know of anything else, but that was it. That's all. It's just as normal as some children accept life here. We didn't complain or anything. We even took it almost for granted that we saw the children in school there used to be dressed in uniforms in every class, the lower or the higher. And we would envy how nice and dressed up they looked, but then that was their life. So.
Did you, except around Easter time or when it was busy, did you work at night? Or did you always worked at night?
No, before Easter time.
Oh. But usually you didn't work?
No, not at night.
So you probably
just work holidays. Big holidays, not just Easter, but Easter especially. Yeah.
Was it very hard physically?
No, not too hard. Because we weren't trained to run around for nothing or play around for nothing. We didn't miss it because anything you never had, you just don't miss too much. Then we began to realize it was already later years.
Yeah. What kind of work did you do exactly?
End work.
What does that mean?
Whatever has to be sewn on, buttons or the hem, that doesn't have to be stitched, a collar tacked on, all the handwork that has to be finished up. Fancy little beads that we trim up, fancy dresses that I did most of it. Hmm. The little machine work began much later years.
Oh, I see. So you did all just the handwork. And did the other apprentices do the same thing?
Yeah. The older ones did the main job. And we watched them. They called us over to watch how they produce, how they do it. They didn't trust us because they were all right.
How old were the other girls who were apprenticing? Were they your age?
About maybe a year or two older.
So you were the youngest girl?
Yeah, I was about the youngest.
Was that an unusually early age to start apprenticing, or that was usual?
Most poor families that had many children that were well, because many, many children. It was very, very impossible to believe. Sick, crippled and damaged and burdened. Mm. And of course the parents were aggravated from their sort of life, so the children got beaten up quite a bit that you wouldn't believe. Not in our family.
Was that true among the Jewish families too then?
Definitely. I saw it myself. I went out at the house, friends are coming, and tell it to my home, and my father would sit and talk about it. Yeah. So these sick children, naturally, couldn't work much. But those that were that I came to work.
Well, did your brother start apprenticing as early as that too?
No. There was Jewish cheder that all Jewish boys had to go until they got to be 13 and bar mitzvah and all that. So they didn't go back.
Oh, so they waited until after their bar mitzvahs before they apprenticed.
Mostly, yes.
Oh, I see.
Unless some of them decided to be scholars, they would go to a place called the yeshiva and continue that. But my brother's the main carpenter in here too, all their lives.
Now, you said before that when you, this man who was teaching you, even while you were apprenticing, you would go back to the classes and she would let you, you go back?
Yeah, just for the class, twice a week.
How many hours was that?
About 2 hours.
Now, was this near your home where her shop was?
Not too far. No. It's a walking distance, but wasn't very far. Naturally, she lived in a better neighborhood, and we lived in a little bit of poor neighborhood, so but it wasn't too far to go. We didn't mind. No.
And so you stayed with her for 2 years then?
Yeah.
And did your work change or anything else change in those 2 years?
I got advanced, more advanced. I began to realize what it really means to learn the better things, you earn better, you have a profession. So that would change. I got more practice a little bit at home too. My mother took in better things. The time I would come home for weekends and stuff, I would help her. So it was work all the time.
Did you usually go home on weekends?
Yes.
Oh, every weekend?
Yeah. Yeah. We mustn't work on Saturday anyway. Even if she was Gentile, but she knew that we have to respect. So Friday, Tuesday we mostly work late in the evening to make it up. And Friday we go home early because it's before the Shabbat.
And then you didn't work Sunday though?
Sunday? Yeah.
You'd go back and work on Sunday?
That's right. Right. Yeah. She might have gone to, if I remember, church or whatever. But we have work to do. I take care of the children, I take care of whatever. Okay.
So by the time you left there, you were working on the machines?
Or yeah,
you were?
That's right.
And did she pay you more at that time?
A little bit more, not much. I worked up to her, I think, if I can remember, for about 18 lotus and 18 rubles a week. It must have been about like a dollar and a half or so. Which was quite a nice bit of money, because for a dollar you can get the nicest coat and a pair of shoes or something. Not the best ones, but, you know, something to wear.
Now, how did you decide to leave her place and go to Poland?
Well, there was a woman that lived not far from us that was also a dressmaker. She took in a little work and she didn't have any help at all, but she knew she would come in sometimes that to be helped. She decided to move to Warsaw for her family. And she came in and she said that over there she was there already, and she rented a place, and that she's going to make her dressmaking in the house. And she asked my mother if she could take me along. So my mother says, all right. She took me with her and two more of my friends that I worked with. I have pictures of them. And she took us in the house, very nice woman, we knew her, so she took in work, put up a sign. You won't live in Poland or anything in Warsaw, main street. Very beautiful city, culture and everything. And so we stayed with her and we worked. And over there, we found out from others, people that we got acquainted, that there's going to be a meeting in a park, it's called the Sächsische Garten, big city park. Students are coming to tell us how to improve the conditions of workers. The fact was that they wanted to acquaint us with the idea that was going on at the overthrow of the Tsar, but they couldn't talk about it freely.
Now, was this after the 1905 revolution?
Yes.
It was after?
Yes. I remember the 1905 revolution. Because they were marching in the street and singing and music and everything. That's the time I found out what the revolution was about and why. My father explained this. He said, you can say join or not. But as I remember his face, there was no objection. because he too must have gone through enough in his childhood. Yeah, that was there in 1905, but the revolution was lost. Not that. Like, arrested. And so over there in Warsaw again, then we learned this action working. There was a big get together, and very intelligent students spoke, which I could hardly understand because they spoke Polish. And I already understood a little bit Russian. But little by little, there was a certain similarity in the languages, not too much, but a certain. I began to understand, and then they organized meetings in private places. It was sort of underground. We were told not to talk about it. And they found out that the workers must be together. In order to demand something, you can't go over by yourself, because you're told if you don't want to, you can go out. But if the whole group comes over, and I'll never forget that impression. I thought it was so sensible. How can you come about by yourself and say you haven't got enough? But the whole group, and in the group has to be picked out one or two that are capable of going over to express. Not everybody can have the courage for that. And that I found out what it means, leadership. And I liked it. I liked it very much. And then they asked for volunteers. I go over, he looked at me, I was quite too young a little bit, but it's all right, we all got a little bit. And there we went over and we began to organize.
Now how old were you then?
About 13.
About 13? And what, you were still with this woman?
Yeah, that's right.
Did she, what did she feel about all this, if she didn't know?
No, we never talked about it, and she never, we saw that she did know a little bit, but she didn't mix in because she was afraid she'll lose us, and we were good workers, we were already dedicated. And so she raised us a little bit and began to give a little bit better conditions. And then I decided to go back home.
Now, what did you do when you organized?
It wasn't completely organized. Mm-hmm. It was going on, the organizing.
But you were
meeting and getting together, yeah, go to meetings and getting together. And get the time that it really got organized was when I came back to Brest-Litovsk.
Oh, but in Poland there was, it was just the beginning.
Yeah, the beginning.
You didn't go to factories and talk to people?
No, no, no. The older ones did, but I didn't. No. I was too young.
And how many people would you say were involved?
In just, mm-hmm. there were many groups because it's a tremendous big city. But in our group, we were about, I would say about 50 maybe, about 45 or 50.
How many women do you think there were?
More than men.
Oh, there were. And this was all industries or just the clothing industry?
All the clothing industry. In the clothing doesn't mean just dresses alone. It's separated. There's suits and coats and dresses and blouses and underwear. And that's all separate businesses. You know, these people came together and there we met together. And we talked about the conditions together.
Was any of the leadership women or were all the leadership men?
All men. Even when they should go out to a strike or demanding something, the men go first, the back of it. We took it also for granted. It never realized. In fact, it was a joy to think that we were called upon. Imagine, my mother couldn't get over it. And I told her she just couldn't, she didn't believe it. And she was scared, of course, because a lot of people were displayed and arrested and everything.
Were there other young girls besides you, or were you?
Yeah, yeah.
There were.
Yeah. Sure. I don't know about them. I could see them in my mind. Yeah, maybe they were a little bit older than I, but I grew up fast. So I mixed in with quite a bit of older ones. But in their talking and in their suggestions, I would feel that they are older, that they have more experience. That these are people to learn from.
Now, in your group of 50 that had meetings and things, was the group set up by area or by the particular industry you were in?
The particular industry.
Oh, so these would all be...
That's right.
What was it that you were making at that time?
How much I was making?
No, what, were you making dresses at that time?
Yeah.
So most of these people were all dressmakers?
All dressmakers.
Oh, I see. And then each group, there'd be a different one for the cap makers.
Yeah, that's right. But at certain occasions, everybody would unite together. Naturally, when you have a demand or something, that makes it stronger. Which I was very enthused I can't forget it. Not everybody, a lot of people were very scared too. I don't blame them. But I had a feeling that I had nothing to lose but gain something, which was true.
Now, did the students remain involved, or they just helped start
it? The students helped start it, and then they helped organize us to go a little bit further than just taking care of our business. And that's what we began to learn. They would lecture for us, they would get us little pamphlets to read up how to go about things, how to involve other people that are afraid in doing things, that we must change the country.
Now, were these Polish or Russian students?
All kinds. Because it's very close. It's close by.
Now, well, how did the police react to this? Did anything happen during the park?
Yes.
Do you remember what went on in the park itself?
Well, park into all kinds of... I even remember a policeman being killed, being shot. I wasn't near there, but later I was told, they got arrested. And younger ones, Mariletny, they call him, those that are not exactly advanced in age cannot go to jail. They were taken to the police station, and the parents or whoever they're involved with would have to come and free them. But those that were above 16 or 18 or something, they went to jail.
Mm. So, in
so when I was arrested, my father came and took me out.
Now, that was later that you were arrested, though, after you left Poland.
Yeah.
Now, during the... meeting in the park. How many people do you think there were at that very first meeting?
Not too big a crowd. I can assume Sirohan, I don't know, just also maybe about 30 or something like that. Sometimes even at a meeting going on boats, small boats, into a place that is on the other side of the river where the police cannot reach us. Because when you go on a boat, six or seven of you, they think you're just going for a good time. Singing, some people play and whistle or something. So we go up across there and that's it. And I went there too. My father was scared to death when he found out. He was told. Somebody watched and saw him. They came and told me my house that I went with him. Okay. He beat me up or anything.
Now, did the police, would the police come to break up most of your meetings, or just...
Quite a bit, yeah. Very, very brutal. Still on, but... that kind of little senior.
So then, while you were in Poland, so you were in Poland for 3 years then?
Not quite. Yeah, a little over 2 years.
And it was towards the end of that that this union organizing began?
Yeah.
And when you were working for this woman, how much were you making then with her?
Polish money, it's hard to tell. It was 8 zlotys a week. It would be about $2 American approximately.
Oh, so it was quite a bit more than
earlier. Yes, she was already this. We didn't have to have her meals or anything.
Oh,
but lunch she would serve. Lunch with all staff and that was on her. But the rest, we all lived in a place, we all, you know, a rooming house.
Oh, you did? You didn't live with her?
No.
I see.
She paid and we paid. But we lived 4 in one room. So whatever we paid, I don't remember exactly, but we had enough to get along. Yeah.
So it was the 4 of you who were working for her?
Yes.
Who lived together?
Yes.
I see. And you were all from the same town?
Yeah. That's why we organized to live together. And she found a place for us. A woman that had the big house, old house, Donetsk. And she made a nice woman for us. We had two on each bed together. And so natural.
Were you working on the machine then for her?
Yeah. Bought whatever was needed.
So did you learn anything else besides?
Yeah.
What other kinds of...
Well, I learned how to do difficult work. There's certain material that isn't easy, like velvet or chiffon or something like that. That's what I learned. It's a very difficult thing.
Did you do cutting too?
Or no.
That was done by somebody else?
Yeah.
And the finishing was done by somebody else too?
Yeah. Mostly specialized in finishing.
I see.
Yeah. I could do both, so whenever there was a need, I filled in. That's why I always had a job. And that was that way.
And then, what made you decide to go back to Russia from Poland?
Because I began to think of joining the revolutionary movement. I already got quite advanced, and I saw already that it's a very necessary thing. And in Brest-Litovsk, I knew most everybody, and it was my hometown. And I was so advanced in work that I wouldn't have trouble finding a job there either. So I came back to sitting back there.
And that was when?
That was about beginning of 1913.
That's when you went back?
Back to Brest-Litovsk. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we began to go out on big hikes, and well, I was the revolutionary movement, and it became very tough.
But when you first went back then, did you go back and live at home, or did
yes,
you...
Yes, at home.
You lived at home. And then where did you work?
I found a job.
And yeah. Was it a large place, or...
No, just
the same kind of thing.
Yeah, some kind of good line, very good line. I met people that there they don't advertise or anything those years. People that knew me from before, they asked me to come up, and I came up and found a very nice place. And... I worked for her, and over there I met a girl in this house with very big meetings and things. And I found out what was going on, and I began to work for them, and it began to be very dangerous. The police and the Kazakhs, if you know what that means, around. And then I talked to a couple of people for a meeting, and they told me that they were going to the United States. And they described me exactly, I read a little bit in the paper about it, but they described exactly what we called it, a country of freedom and all kinds of things. And I thought, maybe I should do it. So I began to plan in North Holland.
Now how, after you came back from Poland, how long was it that you stayed in Brest?
About a year.
A year, that's all.
Not really. The First World War was beginning to start. I left in November the 19th, and the First World War broke out the following year in July, 1940.
So you left in 1913?
Yes, I left before the year, and sort of in the middle.
Now, what kind of revolutionary union work were you doing exactly in before you left? In the
organizing country? People, talking to people my age, trying to meet them and tell them to join in and give them explanations, whatever I was giving, I gave over to Rebecca again.
Now, well, people were mainly in these small shops, weren't they? It wasn't
yes.
like in New York with the big industries. There was people in there
small.
Working in someone's home,
yeah,
usually.
Yeah.
How did you find the people to talk to, usually?
There's places where people would go out to walk the boulevard, if you know what I mean. There was a new boulevard, an old boulevard, Nevsky Prospect. Those nicer places, like here, yeah, Wilshire Boulevard. Naturally, people had to go out, there was no entertainment. So if you go out, you meet other people, you talk to them, you sit down, you talk to them, and then you ask them what they do, and they ask you, and you begin to see if you can talk to them. Sometimes you get a little bit of that sound, but you don't have to get scared away from it. And you tell them to come in to a certain place to enjoy themselves, and over there they teach them that.
Now, these were all girls that you would talk to?
Yes. Yeah. All would go talk to boys. All girls would talk.
And then you would call people together in a meeting?
Yes.
And were there any actual actions that occurred, or it was just organizing still?
Okay.
Were there any strikes, or...?
Yeah, there was not in the dressmaking. The dressmaking didn't get organized. But in other lines that we found out, we helped them out too.
But you were just organizing and dressmaking.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you say you got arrested?
Yeah, when that was not at the dressmaking strike. The bakers, this was a big city, as it was. And the bakery line was supplying to the smaller towns that didn't have bakers. So they were a very big setup. And they went out on strike. And they were told, as I mentioned before, that teenagers, if they picket, they can't get to jail. So they would give us the signs and send us, they would stay by the side and we would do the picketing to tell these cabs not to go in and all kinds of that. And the police tried to stop us, and we didn't. So they took us to, not to jail, to the police station. And then my father came and freed me. Spent just a few hours. It was very heartbroken. But what can you do? He understood that.
How many of you were there picketing?
Oh, maybe about 10 of us or so.
And all teenagers?
Divided, all teenagers.
And was it all girls?
No, boys too. Older ones, yeah. Because the people, the workers from there did not picket. They were standing by the side. Because if they were picketing, they would be taken to jail. And there to jail was quite a job. With my question of bail, because you can't bail out anybody there. But us, we couldn't, so we were close. If they had to do arresting, they did arrest us.
And that was the first time you were arrested then?
Yeah. First time. Naturally, I was scared to death, you can imagine. But the policeman told me that there was no telephones or anything. You can't call up my father and say they had to go over and bring him. And a police car. Not an automobile either. And like that, sitting there, policemen, people looking at him. But he had to come and take me out.
Was that the first time you were on a picket line? Or had you picketed before?
I picketed before on Warsaw a little bit.
Oh, where was that?
The dance store, and uh-huh. Trying to organize the dressmaking. But they were there. They were a little bit ahead of Brzezowski. That's why I came to help out in Brzezowski, because I saw how advanced they are, according to my knowledge. Yeah, they are picketing for them too. He took me up on board. And I told the lady that I worked for the night sick. I came into work. No telephone, nothing. First time I saw a telephone, something to write about too. So I came into work and I thought it for about 2 hours. I thought that I don't feel well and I had to go back home. And then the lady went to the line.
And what did you pick it? Where did you pick it?
Where? On the place where they had a lot of workers. Warsaw was a very advanced city.
Yes. Oh, so there were larger factories there? I see.
Yes, Warsaw was much more advanced. Yeah.
And how many people were on that picket line?
A big line, I would say. Very big line on the side of it. I don't know. Must have been about 20 or 25. That time it was a big line, that's like in here. You don't compare modern times. Yes, it was more than that, maybe.
And it was all ages, or again, it was mainly teenagers?
No, there were a little bit older ones too, yeah. Mothers were working with their children. They were working, you know, they had to work to make a living. Our husband didn't make exactly enough to live. They just were so small, that's how they all ended up in picket line.
Did anyone get arrested in that picket line?
Yes. Not we, but they got arrested. But so we didn't close it because we were all teenagers.
Was there any other picketing that you did? It was those two times? Those two?
Yeah. In New York.
Mm-hmm. Then you decided to, that you were going to leave. Can you tell me a little bit about how you made that decision?
Well, that had to do a little bit of a romantic situation too. In the organization I met a young man. We got acquainted as family. He was organizing and helping out and helping me to find out. And he had to go to be accepted as a soldier. They called it a certain name, they had a certain age. He had to go. And he didn't want to go. He didn't want to become a soldier because he was a great revolutionist against the Tsar, and he didn't want to be a soldier there. So he told me that he was going to run away. But not a group of soldiers that didn't want to respond. So he ran away first, and he wrote to me. And then when I decided to go, he sent me a ship's card.
What is that?
That time you couldn't fly, and you couldn't come here by train. You had to come by boat. And there's a certain ticket that you have to buy here, and send it over there that the person would come.
I see.
So he sent me that, and I told my parents about it, and I also got a few more people that were in the hospital then, without passports or anything.
Now the others,
over the border.
The others were your same age?
No, older.
They were older?
Yeah. I always knew you were a little bit older.
And you crossed into Poland then?
They went to Poland by train. From Russia, it took 8 hours. And from Poland, we ran over the German borderline. All night. Somebody that led us, of course, that paid for that. And there was someone from Germany, they went to Antwerp, if you heard about that. And they took a boat which is called the Lapland. A big, beautiful boat. We all had tickets. And off we went.
Now, did you sleep on the deck, or did you have...
No, we had a cabin, a group of us, five of us, girls.
Five girls?
Yeah, in the cabin.
Did you have any trouble crossing these borders or getting to Antwerp?
No,
no trouble. And you had no trouble getting on the boat itself without a passport?
No, we had the passport, so that means you're the man that you asked for. You see, if you have a passport that time, for that country, and your name send a passport means that somebody's waiting for you there. You're not going to be any trouble to anybody.
Oh, I see. So since he sent you this thing, it was okay, even though you didn't have a passport yourself?
No. The passport you didn't need. The only thing to need a passport is to get out of your country. But once you're out of the country, you're off you go. Because in Germany, they don't want you to remain there. You're not a citizen. You're nothing. Off you go to America.
I see. How long did the boat trip take?
Let's see, I can't remember. I think it took about 10 days or 12 days, something like that. Yeah. Lapland. Very nice boat. Well, of course, I'm the third class in the power district. But it was lively. We meet a lot of people, and everybody was hoping and looking forward to God knows what kind of a future it was going to be. And we did one away from a lot of trouble.
Did you have money with you when you...
You had to show $25.
And you had saved that?
No, I didn't save it. I borrowed it. Just that, and then I worked here, I paid it back there.
I see. So you arrived then with $25?
$25, and you had to be in good health. And naturally, I wasn't married and I didn't have any family, so there would have been a problem, but there was a Jewish organization to help out young people that come in this kind of a condition. So we applied to them and they took us off. And we stayed there in a certain home there on the Lenses Street.
Now, did they meet you at the boat?
Yes.
I see. Yeah.
The agent that took care of the going let them know how many and the names and everything. And you come in and after you get all the questions and everything else, then they call your name and you meet the people and they take you off.
Now, this young man arranged all this for you?
No, I agent arranged all this for me.
In Antwerp or back here?
What?
The agent was in the United States or
no,
in Antwerp?
No, back there.
In Antwerp?
Yeah.
I see.
Sorry. Antwerp, I think. Is that how you pronounce it? Antwerp?
Antwerp.
Antwerp, I think you called it. Yeah.
And
stay there for a day.
So you didn't stay at Ellis Island at all then when you landed?
No. The same day we then was. We came in the morning and it took hours to be investigated and interviewed and adapt to checks and everything. And about towards evening, I was taken off.
Yeah. And was this home only for girls, or was it for any Jewish immigrants?
For just girls. Jewish girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was only Jewish, wasn't
only
it?
Only Jewish, yeah. They took care of it. And they promised responsibility. These people had to sign up for you. They had to help you find a job because you didn't speak the language. And naturally, so people were very helpful. And then for a little while I moved with another couple of girls and for my home there.
Well, now you stayed there when you first arrived there, you went right to this home. And then you told me before that you got a job the next Monday.
That's right.
Now, did they help you find
yes.
a job?
Yes.
And you spoke only a little
only
bit of Russian and mainly Yiddish.
Only Yiddish. Russian was no use. I used the Yiddish in teaching.
And what was that first job?
Dressmaker, a French woman, that lived in Delancey in 110th Street in New York. I can never forget it. And she couldn't speak exactly Yiddish, but a little bit she understood. But she wanted experience. She didn't speak too much English either. And so she beginning the work, and she took us. And it's very nice. It's very far to travel, because I live in East New York, and this Delancey Street is way on the other side of the park there. What do you call that?
Central Park?
Yeah, way on the other side of Central Park. 100 in Hempstead. But trusted ourselves.
Was it, she just had a little shop of her own?
Yeah, in the house.
In the house.
Yeah, she made exclusive things for wealthy people or for stores. That was the first time I realized that this merchandise that got the stores to be sold, not a private dressmaking. So I worked there for quite a little while.
How many people were working for her there?
I think it must be about 10 or 12 people there.
But you were no longer an apprentice, you were now a full
worker. Sure. She started me with $4 a week, which was a lot of money. Because I paid $4 a week for room and board.
So you had nothing left then?
No.
And that was in this home?